I'm quite certain that what I prepared today mimics the message that Russ gave. It usually does. So let's bring ourselves into a state of receptivity. With our feet on the floor, three conscious breaths. A deep in breath. We're going to go over some things we went over before because it's useful to hear them again. And as Kathy knows, when she was here 2 weeks ago, some of us already have all these lessons inside of us already. And I shared last week the story you told Kathy.
Oh, good grief, which one? I don't remember which story did I share.
Just about how last week when I invited you to come by and you said, no, I can't.
Right.
And then another intelligence said, you're going. So you followed the other intelligence rather than your mental pattern. That's what I remember.
Yeah.
I recorded it. You can listen and see if I
can. No, I remember it well.
I got it right. So here we go. The Yoga of Renunciation from the Bhagavad Gita, the Song of the Lord. We're setting the song. The Song of the Lord. We're going to jump right in. Remember last week the sloka said, we need to distinguish between right action, wrong action, and inaction. Maybe a little exercise. We'll do it again this week, a little differently. And also it says the way of karma is nearly possible to understand. Karma is what we do. It's just what we do. All the things we do and have done and will do. That's karma. The way of that is nearly impossible to understand, and yet it says we should distinguish between right action, wrong action, and inaction. And the next sloka seems to go to a completely different place. So we'll keep this in mind, right, wrong action, inaction. The person is wise who sees the inaction in actions and the action in inaction. He or she is a yogi, a spiritual person, and can accomplish everything. Somehow Rev Russ accomplished everything in that story he told us. So how was it? Did he see inaction in his action? Did he see action in inaction? We certainly know he had a lot of actions going on. They were all up in his head. He told us about them. The actions were anxious thoughts. Those are the actions. Our thoughts and what we do are tightly interrelated. So we can think of what our mind thinks as actions just as well as what physically do. Person is wise who sees inaction in actions. Here our minds are going quickly split. Where's the inaction there? And the action in inaction. We went over this last week. Let's look at the commentary again. I've trimmed it down. So I skipped over some of the things we've gone over before. If you're a wise person, you take both positioned simultaneously. You know who is doing and who is observing. So the action's the doing, the inaction is observing. And where do we observe? Probably from that deeper place, the other intelligence. It's where we observe. Or as you called it, your heart space. We have the ability to observe there. And because you know how to be the witness, then even though your body and mind may be doing things together, body and mind, you know it is not you who are acting. It's this subtle insight that we are not our thoughts. Reverend Russ wasn't the anxious thoughts he was having. He wasn't what he was doing, making videos and calling Uber. You know, it is not you who is acting. The real you doesn't act. The other intelligence that spoke to Kathy and said, go to second tier circle, doesn't act. It just observes, and we are sometimes aware of it and know what to do or not to do, or when to do nothing. But in the previous sloka, Krishna finishes by saying the way of karma is impossible to understand. And from the viewpoint of the onlooker who sees somebody doing something. The way of karma is impossible to understand. And this is from the viewpoint of the onlooker who sees somebody doing something. The onlooker cannot tell whether the person is acting or not acting. So in the world, there's no discernment. People see you acting or not acting. Only the one doing the action will know, and this is very deep. So we need to hear it again and again to incorporate it. Only the one doing the action will know. To understand karma, what we do, what we think, things we act, one has to rise up to a certain level where it is possible to discriminate between correct action, wrong action, and inaction. Rise up to a certain level or go deeper to a certain heart space or other intelligence to be able to discriminate. Because our reactive minds are set up to tell us what to do all the time. And they're very useful. Thank you for our blessed minds telling us what to do all the time. They keep us going in normal circumstances. We have wonderful habits and we're blessed by them. Thank you, God, for our wonderful habits. And yet, sometimes we need to go to a certain level, inside, higher, whatever you call it, because we need to discriminate correct action, wrong action, and inaction. So it's almost not so much rising up, but allowing ourselves, our space of ourselves, our space to always be receptive to that inner heart or intelligence. Even though we're in the space of doing what we do, reacting, talking, thinking, to keep a space always open for that other intelligence, that heart space, in case something touches it and needs to communicate something to us. We need to keep that space open. A simple exercise, Satchitananda likes these examples, is that the lotus flower which blossoms when the sun comes up. This is kind of fun. When the sun goes down, it closes. Is it the sun that causes the blossom to open in the morning and close in the evening? Your mind has an answer for this. My mind does. I'm guessing your mind has the same answer. Well, yeah. The sun makes it happen. Or does it?
I went to this, our response to our experience of the sun. Not the sun, but how we respond to the sun.
Is it the sun that causes or makes the blossom to open in the morning and close in the evening? Ask the sun, why are you doing that? Or the onlooker. There's the sun, just like people are looking at us. Why are you doing that? The sun says, I don't know anything. All I know is I'm here. I don't even come and go. It's you who says the sun rises and sets. I'm never up. I never set. I don't get upset. The sun just is. From your standpoint, you think I'm coming and going. Similarly, a yogi appears to be doing things. That's us. Coming and going, accomplishing this and that. Sometimes he may even say he's doing things, as we do. But in fact, it's nature making things happen. This is nature in the larger sense. Nature includes all our conditioning, our reactive minds. It's nature making things happen. We look at ourselves, we say, I. But if we have this larger discernment, if we open the space up so that there's something else that we're always aware of to guide us from that other place, we can see that it is nature, or our nature, making things happen. It's our nature to think certain thoughts. It's our nature to do certain things. Nature makes things happen. And the yogi, as ourselves, is a constant witness to it all. Maybe not an active witness, because our minds need to be single focused, don't they? If we're truly effective, we are taught it's good not to think about this and think about that, think about this and have multiple thoughts going on, although we often do that when we're driving a car, for example. Think this and think that, and as well as thinking about driving the car. We are taught to be truly effective. One thought, to be single-minded, is the effective way to do something. And yet, can we, in that single-mindedness, doing whatever we're doing, still leave open that larger space? So somehow it's always there, and we're receptive to any guidance that comes to us from that larger space, the heart space, or whatever we want to call it. It is our minds that where it's useful to be single focused. And even while our minds are single focused, can that larger space always be available? Somehow we're listening at all times, even though it's normally quiet doing what we're doing. So that when from that larger space, we are a constant witness to it all.
Do you remember what Bertrand Russ said this morning that came to him in the midst of all of his chaos? Was it, it's an idea Yeah. Wishing to be expressed
or an idea.
A divine idea, wishing to be expressed. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. That's what you're leaving the space open for.
He put his mind in a different place. His mind was upset. The plane was late. The Uber was late. He promised to be there and give this. He likes to keep his promises. He has, as he noticed, an attachment to keeping his promises. It's one thing to keep your promises, it's another thing to be attached to it and not allow whatever shows up in the universe to guide us along or to happen or to resist whatever happens in the universe. He was resisting what was happening in the universe. Uber's late, plane's late, I promise. What will they think if I'm not there? I said I would be there, and so on.
Right.
And then he, through spiritual practices, he remembered this other thought to replace the reactive thoughts which were in his nature. That was nature acting. And from where did that other thought come? We might say it was from his heart or from this other intelligence, and it popped into his mind. He didn't have to do a thing, did he? Somehow, in that larger space, which he apparently is able to put himself in, not always, but from time to time, he was receptive to that other thought. There is a divine idea here wanting to express itself, and his consciousness shifted when, from that other space, some new intelligence came in to his nature. Is that what happened? That's what I heard. So nature was making things happen for him, upsetting thoughts, alternatives, and so on. And the part of him that was a witness to it all finally gave him the thought that allowed him to transcend what was going on with him and notice he had an attachment, to step back from his own mind and see he had an attachment to whatever it was, being on time. So he was a witness. And that way, Rev Russ understood the secret of karma, just like we as yogis can understand the secret of karma, which is what we do, what we think, how we think. The secret of it. The secret is that larger space. It's always available to us. The yogi perceives action from the state of inaction. Where did that idea come to Rev Russ, that there's a divine idea in this? That came from a state of inaction. See that?
Mm-hmm.
The part of him that delivered it up to his mind was an inactive state. And it just put that in his mind. So the action, all his thoughts, what he was doing, perceive that from that state of inaction where this revelatory thought came to him. At the same time, enjoying inaction in the midst of action. So in a certain way, when he was going through all these actions, all these thoughts, doing this, getting the cab, doing all these things, perhaps he was enjoying inaction, the place where this calming, revelatory thought came from, in the midst of everything he was doing. And from there, it allowed him to see that this was, he called it a miracle, I mean, it's lab. What do you call it? Transubstantiation?
Bilocation. You said you achieved bilocation.
In the same place the two times.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. He was seeing those things from that place of inaction within him, while he kept acting, kept acting, and yet he'd gotten in touch with that place of inaction, which brought him back to his peace. That is who he is and was. Not everything he thinks or everything he does.
But he didn't become attached to inaction, because he let the inaction place, heart space, tell him what to do, and he followed his guidance. So he wasn't attached to inaction, which is, I can't do anything about this.
Yes, the scripture says we need to be discerning what is right action, what is wrong action, and what is inaction. We need to be discerning. So we're discerning some of that today, aren't we? What is right action, what is wrong action, and what is inaction? We're discerning that, those spaces. And as you point out, attachment to anything that we discern might not be in our best interest. Rather than be attached to it, let it be. Let our actions be. That's just nature. We're part of nature. We see the squirrels and the birds out there, part of nature, doing their thing. The squirrels and the birds see us doing our thing. They think we're just part of nature in everything we do. And when they read our minds, we can say, oh yeah, that's part of nature, all the thoughts they think. Just like we see that in nature. And the birds and the trees and the grass are all in tune with larger consciousness without doing anything. They just exist in a natural harmony. This may sound a little philosophical.
Yeah.
We've tried to make it not so philosophical. It's nice to hear, but hearing is not enough. When you reach the stage where you experience this, then you'll say, yes, I know what he means. And we've been striving to have some experience of this action and inaction, and being able to perceive what is truly a right action, what is truly a wrong action, and what is truly inaction. Well, I have an exercise if you want to do one. We can practice ourselves. It's somewhat like the one we did last time. It's going to be an exercise in perception of awareness. The idea is to be aware of actions that we do, bodily actions, to be aware of thoughts that our mind thinks on our behalf, those are part of our nature, and also to be aware of the heart space of other intelligence that watches. That's three things to be aware of at one time. I'll guide you through it, and let's see what happens. We may be successful, we may be a failure, and we're open to it all. Open to success and failure. So let's allow our eyes to close. Take a deep breath. Notice our breath. Notice your right hand, or your left hand if you're left-handed. Either one. I'm going to give you an instruction. During forming the instruction, be aware of what your body is doing, be aware of what your mind is thinking, and be aware of the observer. Slowly move the hand that you're aware of up, and touch your nose. first of two exercises, were you aware of what your body was doing, your nature? Were you aware of what your mind was thinking or not thinking, part of your nature? Were you aware of that greater space that's always there about you, witnessing your body's actions and your mind's actions? Just for fun, let's try it one more time. Give your body permission to raise the designated hand slowly and touch your nose, noticing what the body did, noticing what the mind is thinking, noticing the space around you, observing. Slowly release your hand, noticing the body, your mind, the space. It's fun to touch our noses, isn't it? That's what happens sometimes when you go to the doctor and they want to check your coordination. And you close your eyes and see if you can touch your nose. Anything anyone would like to share before we move on to some other ways of looking at these things? Yes, Sam.
It seems to be easier in silence to notice as a third party observer than if I'm talking or listening.
Good observation.
Yeah, and then with Reverend Russ's message today, I'm wondering, he's not here to ask, but I'm wondering if it was more that he noticed that afterwards, to let go of, and noticing that him not being there was a divine moment of whatever it was, but it was seems like it was easier for all of us afterwards to notice that. Like my experience in the past, I can notice it's much easier and a blessing in disguise afterwards, not during. Right?
And part of our spiritual practices is, for me, often I notice the following morning when I'm doing my meditative practices, I'll notice some insight. So that's 8 to 24 hours after it happened. As part of our spiritual practice, can we narrow the time down to maybe 4 hours after it happened? Or 3 minutes after it happens? Or 10 seconds after it happens? Or during the experience itself? That's the path of the yogi, to narrow the gap between noticing, observing, and just being a part of nature. My habit is I tend to notice those things the following morning. Maybe I'm over-attached to that habit.
I have the trick that I have, I don't call it a trick, but I notice that when I'm in the middle of something, particularly if something is beginning to cause me anxiety or whatever, I've learned to just, if I just very quickly can ask myself, it's like, is this an old feeling? Is this, if is this familiar? If it's familiar and old, that's a huge tip to me. That, you know, my ego is,
I think you're
really
right.
Tripping me up.
I noticed that for me too. If I can ask that question, usually it takes me days or weeks, but if I can finally ask it, I have an upsetting situation here at church, for example. Never quite got over it. And it came up again a few days ago, and I remembered to do that, maybe from what you said. And I said, is there some old thing? Bang! Up came a childhood memory. Bang! It was George. Childhood memory. And now I know, whenever this current source of upset occurs, I just remember George. This has nothing to do with this person. It's all about George and what happened then. And that softens it for me.
Yeah, a lot of times I can't even figure out what it is. It's like a game of whack-a-mole in there. You know, so for me at this point, it's enough that if it feels old and familiar, I tend to be able to let it go more easily because I know I'm in the throes of the clutches of my ego is acting out somehow.
Yes, you can bet that if Rev Russ's little voice at the beginning of his upset had said to him, Russ, remember when you were a little kid, something happened just like this and you got upset? This is just an inadvertent reminder of that. This is nothing to do with what's going on. Remember that, Russ? It could be a spiritual practice. Bless his heart for him, but we don't always remember to do that. I don't, even though I know it's a good thing to do.
A practice I have used is asking the question, is this just fear popping up? Is this just a fear-based response? Like, walk up to the airplane and say, I don't want to get on that airplane. Is that a fear-based response or is that intuition? And hopefully you can figure out the difference.
And of course, when we talk about a fear-based response versus intuition, we have to distinguish between a present fear that is truly manifesting as a fear, or something that reminds us of an old fear. So we have an embedded fear. It's in our throats, in our backs, in our shoulders, waiting to be come and remind us. That's sometimes hard to do because those old fears embedded in us seem like present ones. But mostly for us, it's not. We don't live in caves with saber-toothed tigers going across. So most of our fears are probably those old embedded ones. Other observations before we press on?
I wonder if we became aware of, as Kathy mentioned, about acknowledging that feeling and then, you know, uncovering those beautiful needs, that self-awareness, that the observer self when we're detached from it, and noticing the need for love or care or peace or, you know, the harmony that we were aching for, right? As in this example, like as a child, if we could honor and just become aware of that, I think somehow it lightens it.
That's our spiritual challenge, to see if what's going on is somehow triggering something, or if it's truly just an open response to the situation as it is, with no threads or chains and stuff. It's part of our spiritual practice to learn how to distinguish.
And I'm curious as to maybe, Kathy, if you'd be willing to share, how do you sit with the feelings, especially when they're uncomfortable?
Um, initially I sat with the feelings in meditation, and that was really tough because I would experience them very strongly, you know, and that would, but it was like, I think that sitting with them in meditation has made it easier for me to spot them, and it doesn't, you know, it's like the difference of being needing to be hit with a 2x4 initially, you know, and once you get hit enough, you learn to recognize it when maybe you just get a gentle, oh, okay, I don't need the 2x4 anymore.
Gotcha. Great so, analogy.
Yeah,
okay.
So.
Thank you.
There's another saying, which is, that which we resist
persists.
So if we have some embedded thing down there and we're resisting it, it's going to come back and bite us a lot. Giving up resistance to that thing often means fully experiencing or re-experiencing it from our new vantage point. Fully experiencing the fear, fully experiencing the anger.
But that's what I had done in meditation a lot.
Yes.
And so it's been tough. You know, it's not like meditation has been, you know, it's been more like, oh, crap. But honestly, that's been very, very useful. And it's also releasing, you know, even though sometimes negative behaviors are, you know, bring you a lot of suffering, etc., there is a perverse attachment to them sometimes. And so, you know, it's being willing then to let that go and be open to what is next, and that's into the unknown, you know. So it's sort of two steps, I think. It's been that way for me.
Yes, two steps. Got to fully experience it, so there's nothing left to resist there. Let it all hang out. You're not resisting anymore. Then it starts to not persist so much. Or maybe goes in stages.
Yeah, and then you can spot it when it starts to rise.
Right.
And then the next thing is, okay, can I let go of, you know, all the stuff that's attaching me to it?
Yes.
You know, it's like the devil, you know, sort of attachment.
Yeah, for me it's George. Oh, there's George again.
Yeah, right. Can
somebody
you let George,
reminded me of George.
Can you let George go and be open to what's going to happen next?
Right. Unfortunately, before I found out about George, there were a lot of other things that happened in between, so I got many Georges from the time of the first George.
Thank you for sharing, George.
We can let it all go.
So George was a great blessing.
Thank you.
So it is
a lot. Yeah, we'll go ahead and close now.
So it's really just becoming self-aware, right? Self-aware of that, okay, there's my stimulus, there's
that
my
space
joy.
Around us, or inside of us, where that observer lives.
The mm-hmm. other thing I'd say is that when I've done this in meditation, a lot of times it's not like I went in and planned it. It was just all of a sudden I'd find this feeling would be coming up, and I'd have no idea where the heck, most of the time now I can't figure out where the heck it came from, what it's about. I've given up, but so I just let it come. So it's not like I go in and think, okay, I'm going to deal with fear today. No, I don't. I just, you know, go in and what comes, comes.
I love your acknowledging that perverse attachment to that wound, though, because I think we all do that.
Yeah.
And but you're looking at it, you're saying, "Yeah, that's what I'm doing."
Oh yeah.
Okay, I don't think
yeah.
that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yes. Wisdom. And it's pretty. It's pretty humbling when you realize what you're attached
mm-hmm.
to.
Mm-hmm.
We perhaps know people that are attached to their wounds. And from attachment to their wounds become more attached, talking about it with others, complaining, I'm wounded, there's my story.
Yeah, whole identity is hinged on it.
Right.
And I can, honestly, I mean, I'm guilty, guilty, you know, yeah.
Well, it is a human tendency.
Yeah.
But somehow, we've been given the gift by grace of the spiritual practices we're drawn to, so we can learn to transcend.
Yeah.
I think it's, for me too, and I'm saying this to honestly, it's like I learned to trust the process, and I, you know, even if it's painful, I know, you know, okay, it's coming up for a reason. Trust the process, and you know, and then I can keep moving on, let it go.
Trust the process. I went to a training one time when someone said, I don't believe in long-term upset. I believe in short-term upset.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yes.
Yeah,
right.
Short-term, get it over with.
In privacy,
sure.
You know, no audience, thank you very much.
And that's accepting the big responsibility to address it. You get in there and do it. You know, walk through that fire. So you can get to the other side.
Yeah, right.
You don't have to keep moving back and forth.
So we close now. Thank you all for wonderful sharing. Let's get our feet in touch with our Mother Earth. Feel the energy of Mother Earth rising through our breath. Breathe three times. And a deep in breath.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.